If you're not returning people's phone calls, you're not getting them the answers they need, then it doesn't really matter how educated you are in a space or how much of an expert you are. So we really strive for service and we get really involved in our clients' lives. So it's more than just investments. I think that's a misnomer in the industry that if you're a CFP or financial advisor, that it's just the investments, and it's really so much more than that. So it's the service and then helping with all areas of our clients' lives.
Welcome to the Active Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Harbor Capital. Join us as we learn from pros who have helped thousands of investors live better lives. I'm Brian Moore, and I'll be chatting with some of the brightest minds in the financial advisory business, bringing you insights on practice management and investment research that works for advisors and their clients. Joining me today on this episode of the Active Advisor Podcast is Barbara Ginty. Barbara is a seasoned certified financial planner and financial expert with a background that includes roles at both Bloomberg and Credit Suisse. She is the proud owner of Independent Financial Services, a thriving wealth management firm that caters to clients of all financial backgrounds and ages. On top of providing customized solutions for each of her clients, she also provides financial literacy content and classes online through her company, Planantial, and teaches personal finance classes at SUNY Ulster. If that isn't enough, she's also the host of the Future Rich podcast, which was selected by Next Advisor as one of the 10 best finance podcasts for 2021, where each week she interviews women about their finances and helps them develop a plan to achieve their goals. Over the past few years, she has been recognized by Investment News in their 40 Under 40 class, by Forbes as a top woman wealth advisor best in state for New York, and most recently, Barbara was named as one of the 100 most influential money experts for 2023. Welcome, Barbara, and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So first off, wow, those are some impressive accolades.
It sounds better when someone says it. I don't think about it that much.
You've got to stay busy. That's the only thing that keeps going through my head.
Yeah, definitely stay busy.
On the Active Advisor, we like to start by asking a similar question. What was the first memory you have related to money or investing?
This is a great question because I think it's a very unique perspective. My first memory to money, which was, I don't even remember what I asked for, but I asked my father for something and the answer was no, because you need money for that. I forget what exactly, I don't even remember what I asked for. But so then I guess my response was, okay, well then how do I make some money, rather than just accepting the no. And he was like, well, what do you think you could do for money? And I came up with the idea of babysitting. Now, I was 10 years old and I was quite small for a 10-year-old. So I probably looked like an 8-year-old, maybe a 7-year-old. So we made flyers at his office advertising my new babysitting business. And I went and handed flyers out at the school. And everybody told me no, because I looked too young and too small to care for a child of the same age or similar age, right? Because I was looking to babysit like a 6-year-old because I was 10. And so I told my dad, well, it didn't work. Nobody would hire me as a babysitter. And he at the time taught at the college, which I teach there now. And so he was like, well, let's look through the college brochure and see if we can fix that. I bet you if you had some sort of designation, you would be hired as a babysitter. So we found out there was an infant and child CPR class at the university and my father signed me up for it and dropped me off. And the professor at the time was like, no children are allowed. And he was like, she's the one enrolled. I'm leaving her here. And so I got my infant and child CPR certification at the age of 10 at the university and went back out with my flyers and said, they said people would say no. And I say, would say, well, I'm certified in infant and child CPR. So I'm actually really a good person to babysit your child. One thing that is a little ironic now as an adult, because a 10-year-old babysitting a 7-year-old doesn't make total sense to me, but I got three families and I was able to make money and I continue to work and make money from that age. So starting at 10, I had made my own money. So when the answer was, you need X, Y to do that or buy that, I always had my own money from that age on.
Well, that's awesome. That's a great story. And it definitely sounds like it not only taught you perseverance and kind of how to overcome different things, but also go out there and be aggressive in life.
Yeah. And thank goodness for those three families that hired the tiny 10-year-old.
Definitely. With that, somebody's got to give everybody a start, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So we're going to fast forward just a little bit, maybe a couple of years. I'd love to hear a little bit about your early career in institutional sales and the journey that led you to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I waitressed all through college. And then upon graduation, I knew I needed to get a job. And so I applied to so many places. But what I thought would make the most sense was doing some sort of training program to get into, you know, a sales training program. I thought that would be really interesting. And I was lucky enough to get into Bloomberg's sales training program. So I got my offer the ripe old age of 21, started right after I turned 22. It was a phenomenal program. I met so many wonderful people at that organization. And the program was quite long. I think we were in it, you know, obviously I always like to try and do things faster than they tell you what the time frame is. So I think they recommend it. I think it was 12 to 18 months. And I think I tried to get out of it faster. I might've been in it 9 or 10 months, but you went through sales training and also financial training. So we took all different types of classes like mortgages, credit derivatives, equity derivatives. You had homework, you had tests. I just think it was like absolute phenomenal program. College was very helpful, but I actually think the sales training program at Bloomberg was excellent. And so from there, I ended up, everybody from the sales training program went into traditional sales at Bloomberg, and I wanted to get into brokerage. And so I moved into the brokerage unit from there, which was, at the time we were general salespeople, but eventually I moved into the equity derivatives team. And then from there, I moved to Credit Suisse.
How did you ultimately decide that you were going to purchase the family business from your father? And what was that process like?
So I was walking home from work late, and my sister called and said, you know, dad and our aunt are selling, it was a, my dad and my aunt are selling the business. And I was like, oh yeah, that's great. Like, I'm going to take them out for dinner to celebrate. They're coming down to the city to sign some paperwork. The time I was living in the city, they were living upstate. And my sister said to me, my younger, wiser sister said, well, I don't know why you're not buying it. And so I retorted, well, I make more money than them, than the whole company. So why would I ever take such a huge hit in income and then have to go back upstate in my hometown, which is, you know, at the time, our hometown was cool again, but at the time it was like, you just wanted to get out of your hometown, right? The whole reason you went to college was to get out of your hometown, not to stay. And so her response to me was, you don't actually love equity derivatives. Like, you like who you work with. And that's not a given that your boss and your colleague, you're all going to stay a team forever. Like, you don't wake up in the morning because you love equity derivative algorithms. You like who you work with and you have a great team, but that stuff can change very quickly. Like, your boss could take a different job at a different firm. Your colleague could move. You could be removed from the team. She's like, you actually like personal finance. Like, you're always helping people with their money on the side. And I will say that people who worked at Bloomberg will remember me because I set up people's 401k. I would just wander around the building, which I'm sure was not allowed, and be like, sit down at their desk and fill out their 401k portal and be like, okay, we're going to put you in at this. And I would pick the investments, and I would, random people would message me and be like, hey, I've heard you set up the 401k. And I was like, yeah, what desk and what floor are you on? And I would wander down and do it. So it was her advice. She said, you should buy the business. You should try a career for something that you actually really like. And then if you end up not liking the business, you could always sell it and go back to Wall Street. Like, Wall Street will always be there, but this is a one-time opportunity to purchase the business. And once they sign those documents, that's it. It's done. It's left the family and there's no going back. So thanks to my sister, I bought the business. She did then have to endure all of the calls crying when I couldn't make my rent payment and was like, this is a terrible idea. I hate my life. But it was her idea. I would have never thought about it, to be honest.
At the end of the day, though, Barbara, isn't that what sisters are for? To kind of just be that supporting person. We all need that person in life, without a doubt. And you're right, it was her idea. Anything bad, that's...
she got the phone call.
It sounds like it's going, it's a smashing success. Would love to hear somebody who also kind of started out on Wall Street. Was it harder than you thought? I know being on the trader and the trading desk and being on Wall Street, Main Street is a little bit different. And I would love to hear if there was anything you learned from your time on Wall Street that really helped you and your clients navigate Main Street.
It's so different. It's shocking. I really underestimated the difference when I left Wall Street. The thing that helped me the most, I think, was being so young, getting my first job out of college and flying around the country to meet with different, you know, hedge funds and money managers. And meeting with the traders that are responsible for a lot of assets and like selling them on your algorithm. I learned a lot of perseverance. I think I made like 100 cold calls to get 10 people to get 2 meetings. I think those were my stats, give or take. At my last firm, we got our sales number every 30 minutes. Every 30 minutes, I knew how I was doing, which most people don't get their sales numbers every 30 minutes. That's an aggressive time horizon to be like benchmarked 30 minutes throughout the trading day. And it was super competitive. I could book a meeting and then somebody else, like for instance, the high touch desk would wander by and I wouldn't know this person. They'd be like, hey, so your meeting on Friday, it's canceled. And they keep going because that was their relationship and I booked there. So there was like all these politics, it was super competitive. Obviously, if you didn't hit your numbers and you weren't good, you got fired. People got fired all the time. Like there was rifts and then people who didn't perform got fired. So it wasn't warm and fuzzy. I really enjoyed the competitive, high stress environment. So I think that environment taught me that if I could do that, if I could go on a top trading floor and make my pitch, and you had to make your pitch in like 30 seconds to 1 minute. It was not leisurely. You either got your sales pitch in and you convinced the trader in under 60 seconds, or you didn't. And then that was not a good day. So what I found when I went to Main Street, which is a completely different type of finance, is in my head, I just constantly thought to myself, if I could do what I did and get into the rooms that I got into and get into the firms, like, frankly, I should have never been hired at a top tier investment bank. Like, I went to a good school, but I didn't go to Harvard or MIT or one of the top schools. I feel like I got very lucky with networking to get into the roles that I got into at the level I got into. And so all I thought when I bought the business, when it was really hard, was if I could have done it, I did that. So I have to be able to do this. And my only other option was to completely fail. There wasn't really an option to not succeed because I signed a 7-figure note on the business. I mean, yeah, I was like in a corner. I had to succeed. I had a huge note. Failure wasn't going to be fun to go crawling back to Wall Street and then be $1 million in debt from buying a business that didn't work out.
It definitely sounds to me like having a similar kind of start. Failure is not an option. So I think it really kind of challenges you and enables you to think outside the box and understand that the pressure's there, but use it to kind of
as a motivator.
Well, yeah, motivator, performance enhancer.
Yeah, it really is.
And I think that can lend itself to a lot of different, you know, outcomes and then positive aspects. So let's dial back the stress here for a little bit. I'd love to hear a little bit more about what you do at Independent Financial Services and who you're serving. And obviously, you bring just such a diverse background into this kind of that side of the business. How are you differentiating your value proposition?
I've always been a big believer that service is the biggest differentiator because anybody can go and pick an investment and take care of it themselves. And I especially think over the last 11 years since I've had the business, service in general has just declined in any sort of area of your life, right? Like whether you're calling the phone company or the internet company or whatever it is, I just feel like the service has declined. So my goal in our for servicing our clients is that we're the best service experience that you have in any regard in your life. So whether you go to the post office, the car dealership, or a restaurant, we want our service experience to be number one. We want it to be the best service experience because at the end of the day, I think that's really what people are paying you for is the service besides the expertise. But if you're not returning people's phone calls, you're not getting them the answers they need, then it doesn't really matter how educated you are in this space or how much of an expert you are. So we really strive for service and we get really involved in our clients' lives. So it's more than just investments. I think that's a misnomer in the industry that if you're a CFP or financial advisor, that it's just the investments. And it's really so much more than that. So it's the service and then helping with all areas of our clients' lives.
That's a great actually segue into an area that I was thinking back to when we talked earlier. You mentioned you do a lot of estate planning. And when you're talking about servicing all aspects of a client's lives, I can't think of too many much more personal than this. Love to hear, if you wouldn't mind, kind of elaborate on the services you're providing and why you find it to be such a pivotal piece of the puzzle.
It's a piece that's overlooked so much because no one wants to talk about it, right? No one wants to talk about what happens when they die. It's a very uncomfortable topic. It's very easy to be ignored, right? We're just not going to worry about that. I won't be here when it happens, so I don't need to be involved in it. And so I think it's so important because I've never had a client walk into my office and say, I worked for 40 years and acquired this net worth, and I'd love for it to go to that nursing home down the street. They definitely deserve every penny of my hard-earned money. So the other option is we could also, you know, no one said, I want to give it to the IRS or some attorney I've never met. And so I just think it's so important that if you've been diligent throughout your life, no matter who you are, you want to know that what you've worked for and sacrificed for is going to go to the people and the places you want it to, whether that's your children, your grandchildren, or charities. But that it's not ending up going to a place like the IRS or a nursing home facility or an attorney you've never heard of just because there wasn't a plan in place. And so I find the estate planning to be critical because what to me, if I'm helping you acquire a net worth and live comfortably in retirement, then the next most important thing is making sure that we should obviously have some assets left over. We don't want to, you know, the hard part with financial planning is we don't know how long you're going to live. So we plan for you to live longer. So that we have something left over is that we make sure that whatever is left over goes to where you want it to and is available for your care should you need it. Right now in New York State, for a non-private skilled nursing home facility, this is like, I'm glad you're sitting down, it's $16,000 a month.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. So in New York State, it's particularly high. I'm in the upstate region. We're not actually that much higher than the city metro area. We're quite high. That's not for a private room. That's just a shared room. Nothing special.
Wow. It's definitely, it's one of the things that's amazed me as I, like yourself, I started on Wall Street. You start when you always realize that you're working with people's lives.
Yes.
And their investments and everything. And you start to kind of go down avenues. And I'm sure you feel this as well. But when you start to like learn what the actual cost is of stuff like that. And you're just, you know, and we've all known somebody at one point in time who's been in a nursing. And it just really does kind of blow your mind. And you hope that people meet advisors like yourselves who are kind of willing to have those hard conversations.
Because that's a net dollar, right? Like you need $16,000 in your pocket, which, you know, you'd need to make $20,000-$22,000 a month to net that. And as a married couple, somebody could have, statistically will have a need for that at some point throughout their lifetime. So you want to, usually you want to plan for what happens if you, should you need that? And then how do we make sure that we can still help you and take care of you should we need to, but also make sure that the nursing home doesn't completely bleed you dry. And the other thing I feel very passionate about, my sister is also an attorney. So attorneys love to send you through probate. She's not an estate planning attorney, unfortunately. I hate probate. That's the other thing, that I don't see any reason for clients to go through probate unless there's a specific reason. And so I'm a big advocate of skipping probate, which does have to do with a long-term care event, but also has to do with if you pass away. And what I hear often is, well, I have a will. And I'm like, that's wonderful. You're going to be going through probate. That is going to be a public forum. You're going to be paying lawyers for that. Cousin Eddie, who lives down in some random area, could come out of the woodwork and contest the whole thing. So that's another area. I just think this is a often overlooked area just because it's taboo to talk about, but I think it's so important. And you see it all the time in the media where celebrities don't have an estate plan. Like Aretha Franklin's estate just got settled because they found in a couch cushion a written document that they've now determined will be effective as a will. But up until they found that in the couch, there was no will in place for her massive estate.
Wow. I don't even want to utter to think what you'd find in my couch cushions.
I was like, well, I don't know how it got in there. And I'm glad that they determined it's going to be sufficient for a will. But also her estate paid $8 million to the IRS, which I'm sure was preventable.
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Obviously, this is an area that you're passionate about. Want to talk and shift gears a little bit, just to talk about something else you're passionate about, which is women in finance. Love to hear about your involvement in kind of supporting women in finance in general. And then if you have a couple of events, we'd like to even talk a little bit more specific.
Obviously, I've been in finance between institutional and now retail since I started at 22. So I'm creeping up on 18 years here. It has been nice to see more women in the room over the last few years, but overall the statistics are pretty dismal with how many women financial advisors there are. The CFP just came out recently and said, I believe we're now around 24% of CFPs out there are women, which is fantastic. I just think it's a great career space for women. It can provide flexibility to a degree. You're in customer service, so you can only be as flexible as your clients' needs are being met. Can't just disappear. And you're completely in control. I think a lot of women overlook this career path because they're worried about math and that it's very investment heavy, which it's not. And also, I think it's super important that if a female would like a female advisor would like to work with a woman, that there is that choice available. And the only way for that choice to be available is for the statistics to improve in the industry. There just need to be more women available for the women. And women will be in control of their money at some point in their life. And I think that's the thing that a lot of women don't take into consideration is 80% of women die alone compared to 80% of men die married. So because women live longer than men. So at some point as a female, you will be in charge of your money and you don't want to at 80 all of a sudden now take over the family finances. So it's at both sides. I'd like to see more women advisors in the industry. And I'd also like to see more women take control over their own finances.
Without a doubt, I think just reading research, there's a couple of different points that I find advisors are starting to kind of get their hands around, which is that, as you just mentioned, women live longer than men. And if advisors don't talk to the wives, or if we'll just say the eventual, basically your end client, then that money's going to go someplace. And so I think, and then why wouldn't it gravitate towards a female woman advisor? It just makes logical sense. And I think on multiple different levels. So it's something that I think you're right. There definitely needs to be more growth and training. Would love to hear, have you come across, since you do teach a class at SUNY Ulster, and you've come up, but you have come up in the business, Have you seen any mentorship programs? Are you involved in any? And then are there any that you would like to see kind of, you know, started?
I've had mentors throughout my career. Ironically, which I don't think is a bad thing, all of my mentors are men. I'm very, very lucky. My boss, who I worked for at Blue Ridge Crest, has been a phenomenal mentor. And I have another mentor that I just clung on to the second I met him. And he has not been able to shake me 18 years later. He's also been a phenomenal mentor. I had Bloomberg had a program where we had mentors and I had a female mentor there, but these two particular gentlemen have been my mentors for the long haul since I was 22. I don't know that I've seen a mentor program. I think that's an interesting concept. What I will say is my whole team is female for both my wealth management practice and for my podcast. And so I've kind of grooming the women who work for me to continue to grow their skill set. And I have friends with other female advisors that we chat. So it's a more informal scenario. I don't know that I've seen a formal mentor system, but that seems like it would be a great fit for the industry. I also do firmly believe that it's important to see people or somebody in the role that you want. And so I think that's why I like to be out there saying that I'm a CFP. This is what my life looked like. This is why I enjoy it. This is the hard part too. There is no perfect career, even when you own your own business. There is hard parts of everything. There is no easy street only. But I think it's important for you to see what you want in the future. That was one thing, one of the reasons I left Wall Street. I did not see a female in a role that I wanted when I worked on the desk.
Well, it's an excellent point. I asked selfishly, I have to admit, just because I have a daughter who I love has visited the trading desk with me when she was younger, and she's kind of been involved in finance and she's in a finance club. And it's one of those things that I think she definitely is like, oh my gosh, it's all numbers. And I'm like, that's not necessarily true. Like, there's a lot of other aspects to this business. And I think, like, I see them in high school and she's 2 years away from college. And I think if there was something that kind of started to help plant those ideas and seeds, then I think we could definitely see that 24% jump, hopefully up to 48%.
Honestly, every time I talk to a young woman, so it's not formal, but I get a lot of intro saying, could you speak to this person? This woman's interested. I just did a call last week with a woman who's been out of the industry, stayed home with her children, is looking to get back into a career after 10 years, which is, it's an obstacle. And not for her, because she has a prior history in Wall Street, but I would say 9 out of 10 people, women that I speak to, the reason they haven't considered the field is because they say it's investment heavy and math driven. And I'm like, no, it's not. It's actually basic math. You just need a regular, like not even a Texas Instrument. You just need a regular calculator, the one that's on your iPhone. It's perfect. It's really basic. And you can outsource all the investments. People think you have to be a CFA. You don't. There's plenty of CFAs that do this every day. And with my experience on Wall Street, I don't believe in managing the money myself, because how would I do a better job than somebody who's dedicated to doing that, who's getting in and listening to the earnings calls and reading the research reports and has a CFA? Like, I have a CFP, I do not have a CFA. So in my opinion, I should never be managing the money, because that's a completely different role. My role is to be the quarterback and aggregate everything, you know, the retirement income, the estate planning, the tax, all of that. And we outsource the investments. And when I tell women that, they're like, oh, you do? There are people with CFAs that do this for you, and you just have to review them and then you hire them. So you don't even have to do that. You just need basic math, which you learned in like first grade, like 2 + 2 = 4. And then you find good investment managers.
That's great. Absolutely love it. And it's so true. Specialization is getting, you know, even more granular these days.
Yeah, absolutely. So, and you can pick whatever specialization you'd like. Like, I just really like estate planning and the law aspect of financial planning, but you could choose to do special needs planning for families who have special needs children and special needs trust, or you could do corporate executives, or you could do tech executives. I mean, you could pick whatever area that you want to specialize in.
Yep. One last switch for you here, because you mentioned it, and it was something I definitely wanted to talk to you about. I'd love to hear a little bit about the Future Rich podcast, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. So we are just launching our 7th season. So we got into the podcast space early for this industry. We were in the space before people in this industry were in this space. And the whole reason why was I was running into predominantly women who wanted help with their finances, who weren't necessarily a good fit for my business. They just needed like a quick chat and then they'd be on their way and they'd be down the right road. As many good ideas come to fruition in bars, it was mapped out on a Bev nap at a bar on the West Side with a group of my girlfriends who said, you help us with everything. You should be able to, you know, we can text you or call you if we have a problem or need a quick answer. We should do a blog, of which I said I cannot write to save my life. My sister, who is the lawyer, is a phenomenal writer. I cannot write. So the other woman who was there, they said, she's a podcast genius, which turns out she had never done a podcast, but she was like, yeah, I can be a podcast genius. And so her and I started this podcast 7 years ago, and it's just grown by word of mouth pretty nicely. And so we interview women from all over the country, occasionally outside of the country, which I don't believe I'm particularly helpful there, but if they want to come on, they can come on. And so women write in from all over the country and apply to be guests. And then we have them on completely anonymous. I don't know who I'm talking to or what they look like. And then, as you said, we talk through their finances and I help motivate them and give them a little direction on how to achieve their goals, whatever that might be. Sometimes it's buying a house or paying down student loans, how to split money with a partner. There's all sorts of things that come up on the show.
I'm sure. That's great. Thank you so much for talking about that. And it definitely sounds like we need more people like you in the business, without a doubt.
Well, hopefully this will encourage some women to jump into personal finance and make a career of it.
Definitely. So in closing, at Harbor, we're firm believers in active management, though it's important to acknowledge that every financial expert has their own unique perspective. From your experience, what's your take on active management and where have you observed it making the most significant difference?
I'm a big believer in active management. I think probably because of my time on Wall Street, I think that it's worth paying a human being to oversee the investment selection, and they're putting work and time and effort and expertise into their picking. I think over the long haul, it improves performance. I think there's studies that have shown that it improves performance more dramatically on the downside because you don't just fall down the cliff with a passive investment. There's somebody saying, oh, okay, let's see what we can do to hedge this downturn. I personally have all my money in active managed funds. So I think that this is the age-old debate, right? It always comes up, passive versus active. I'm not a big believer cheaper is better in any area of my life. And so I think the big sales pitch for passive is cheaper. And I think as you get older in life, you realize cheaper is not your best option. I always associate your personal finance with your health. Those are usually ranked as the two top important things for individuals, their money and their health. And so if I needed a surgery, I wouldn't be looking for the cheapest surgeon. I'd be looking for the best. So that's how I relate it to money. I look for the best. And if they're a little bit more expensive, that's okay. If they have the better returns, right? And that I usually find that with actives.
Nope, very true. That's awesome. It was a great day to hear that analogy. It's funny when you think of it that way. People automatically, so often in this business, you tell them one thing, they're like, yeah, but I want cheaper is better than you. You tell them, okay, if we use that line of analogy. Thought, and we did this to so many of the other areas, like, oh, I don't want to do that everywhere.
Yeah, you're having brain surgery. You wouldn't be like, okay, let me look up the cheapest brain surgeon in the United States, and I'm going to work with that person. You want to look up the best. You would even say, it doesn't matter what it costs. I want to have the best brain surgeon. So I just think that you should take the same approach with your money. You want to have the best. And if it costs a little bit more, as it probably would, because it's better, that makes the most sense.
Very well said. Couldn't have said it better myself. Thank you so much, Barbara. Last but not least, how can people find you? Love to hear your podcast and on social media.
Yep. Our podcast is on Spotify and Apple. It's Future Rich Podcast. And I guess professionally, you can find me on LinkedIn, which is Barbara Ginty.
Excellent. Please, everybody, go out there and look her up and sign up for the podcast.
Yes, please sign up for the podcast.
This is my favorite part of the episode, which is I call it the lightning round. It's officially called 60 Seconds with Barbara Ginty. Let me know when you're ready.
Okay, I'm ready.
Nickname.
Ginty.
Hobby.
Being.
Profession if you weren't in finance.
I'd probably do private equity.
Hidden talent.
I always win the limbo competition.
How many countries have you traveled to?
I'm approaching 40.
Next destination.
My next destination is a threefold. So we're going to Norway skiing and then Copenhagen and then Sweden.
Best professional advice you've ever received.
If you take care of your customers will take care of you.
You can only eat one food for the rest of your life. What would it be?
Wine and cheese.
Favorite mountain that you've hiked?
Snowbird.
Biggest risk you've ever taken?
Personally, upgrading my life and moving to Utah after a ski trip. Professionally, leaving a well-paying, successful job on Wall Street to buy a business which was located over a hot dog stand, which is the wealth management practice.
What's one question clients should always ask their advisors?
Are you fiduciary?
What never fails to make you laugh?
Oh, there's so many good things on TikTok.
Social media follow recommendation.
Future Rich Podcast.
Best part of your job?
The people and helping people.
Favorite way to get active?
Skiing.
Whether you're a seasoned advisor or just getting started, the Active Advisor brought to you by Harbor Capital offers professional insights for the financial advisor community. Visit us at harborcapital.com to learn more. And don't forget to subscribe to The Active Advisor on Apple, Spotify, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts to stay up to date on investment trends, tried and tested research methods, and what your industry peers are up to. From all of us at Harbor Capital, thanks for tuning in.
And now for important disclosures. This material is for informational purposes and is not intended to be relied upon as a forecast, research, or investment advice, and is not a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any securities or adopt any investment strategy. The opinions expressed are as of 8th of February 2024 and are subject to change. The opinions expressed by the speakers do not necessarily represent the views of Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. The information and opinions contained in this material are derived from proprietary and non-proprietary sources deemed by Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. to be reliable and are not necessarily all-inclusive and are not guaranteed as to accuracy. This material may contain forward-looking information that is not purely historical in nature. Such information may include, among other things, projections and forecasts. There is no guarantee that any of these views will come to pass. This material may not be representative of the experience of other individuals. Reliance upon information in this material is at the sole discretion of the viewer. This material is not legal, tax, or accounting advice. Please consult with a qualified professional for this type of advice. Investing involves risk, including the risk of loss. Stock markets are volatile and equity values can decline significantly in response to adverse issuer, political, regulatory, market, and economic conditions. Fixed income investments are affected by interest rate changes and the creditworthiness of issuers. As interest rates rise, the values of fixed income securities are likely to decrease. Specific companies and issuers are mentioned for educational purposes only and should not be deemed a recommendation to buy or sell any securities. Any companies mentioned do not necessarily represent current or future holdings of any investment products. Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. does and may seek to do business with companies covered in this podcast. As a result, listeners should be aware that the firm may have a conflict of interest that could affect the objectivity of this podcast. This material is prepared by Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. is not affiliated with
Independent Financial Services.
All trademarks or product names mentioned herein are the property of their respective owners. Copyright 2023 Harbor Capital Advisors, Inc. All rights reserved.